Welcome to Cyberspectives, a cybercrime magazine podcast series brought to you by Microsoft. In this series, we're joined by Ann Johnson, Microsoft's Corporate Vice President of Security, Compliance, and Identity. Ann oversees the long-term investment and partnership strategies for security, compliance, and identity for Microsoft. From the way the tech industry is tackling cyber threats to the language it uses to communicate, Ann is challenging traditional schools of thought, traditional cyber norms, and encouraging the industry to get outside its comfort zones to expand how we address the evolving threat landscape, and this includes cyber resiliency. As a global cybersecurity influencer and strategist who regularly engages with C-level decision makers, she is looking at how today's cybersecurity investments will impact tomorrow's cybersecurity reality. I'm your host, Hillary McClure, Multimedia Director at Cybercrime Magazine. In this episode of Cyberspectives, we'll be discussing Zero Trust. Zero Trust has always been key to maintaining business continuity, and now it has become even more important to helping enable the largest remote workforce in history. While organizations are empowering people to work securely, when, where, and how they want, Microsoft has found the most successful ones are also empathetic to the end user experience. So how does an organization go about implementing a Zero Trust strategy while maintaining business continuity and balancing their employee needs? Keep listening to find out. Ann, welcome to the show. So happy to be speaking with you again.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here. I enjoy these conversations.
I do too. And I'm really excited for this conversation around Zero Trust. So, and you know, before we begin, I guess let's start with the basics. How does Microsoft define Zero Trust?
You know, I think that's a really fantastic way to start because there is a lot of industry buzz and noise, and we have the executive order, and Zero Trust is getting to the point where people are having a hard time like pinning it down. So we define it, I'm going to be really precise, in about 3 to 4 specific buckets. One, you assume you've been breached, right? So assume breach, that's number one. Assume that somebody is in your environment always. Number two, least privilege. Anyone who accesses your network, I was going to say your employees, but really contractors, consultants, anyone who accesses your environment should have the least amount of privilege they need to do the task at the time they need it. That means privilege is dynamic, by the way. It could change depending on what tasks someone needs to do at that point in time. Three, use multi-factor authentication. 100% of your users, 100% of the time. It's imperative that when anyone who accesses your environment, like I said, employees, contractors, consultants, doesn't matter who they are, that they're strongly authenticating. We know that multi-factor authentication or strong authentication stops the majority of breaches. We have data that shows us that there is some type of credential element, stolen element, in almost every significant major breach. So if you just assume you've been breached, grant the least amount of privilege, use multi-factor authentication, you've started the journey towards Zero Trust. The final step, I will say, one that's incredibly important, interrogate every single transaction that happens in the session. It doesn't matter if that transaction is coming from a human, a device, an application, some piece of data, network device, IoT device, OT environment, it doesn't matter. You need to be inspecting and interrogating every single transaction that happens, and you need to be looking for anomalous behavior, because regardless of whether it's a human or a device or an application, it does have expected behavior. And those are really the core principles of Zero Trust. Assume breach, use multi-factor authentication, use least privilege, and interrogate every transaction during a session.
Excellent. Thank you for breaking it down in such a really, you know, helpful, palatable way. And that's really great for our listeners. And recent cyber attacks are, of course, a grim reminder that as we all forge ahead, securing access to data digitally becomes even more crucial. So I'm curious, how does adopting a Zero Trust approach provide flexibility that today's workforce needs to respond to the demands of business?
Yeah, so we are going, you know, a year and let's say a year and 4 months ago, we went to an environment where, you know, 80 to 90% of people around the globe were working remotely, right? They were working on devices that maybe were shared, They were working on devices that maybe hadn't been issued by their companies, and they were working in a remote world. Now we're going back to an environment where a lot of people are going to be hybrid. Most organizations have announced, or many organizations have announced, that, you know, 50% of their workforce or people who work from home 50% of the time. It's variable, right? But we don't have this expectation that 100% of people are going to be back in an office 100% of the time. These are really challenges for your security organization. Right. Because if you think about the user experience of, you know, maybe I'm working on a device, but my daughter is also doing her college work on the same device. And maybe she's clicking on a link that is unsafe and I'm going to use that device to access Microsoft. I've inherently created risk for Microsoft. So if you are using zero trust, meaning that you're trusting but verifying everything, you're verifying every transaction that happens in the session. So even if I take that laptop back and I start doing my work on it and she has somehow downloaded some malicious malware, if Microsoft's zero trust is interrogating every transaction in the session, we're going to be able to detect and block that from getting onto the Microsoft environment. That's the best example I can give you. So that as users then are in hybrid environments, maybe I'm working in the office half of the week and I'm working from home half of the week, there's still going to be expected behavior. Users behave in a pretty predictable way. Devices should have an expected behavior. My application should have an expected behavior. The data I'm trying to access will have an expected behavior. And that's what we talk about, that interrogation. The final thing is on that least privilege. Really, really important, by the way, because in that scenario, I should have the least amount of privilege for doing, maybe it's checking my email. It doesn't take an awful lot of privilege, by the way, for me to look at my inbox. I should have the least amount of privilege, and it's dynamic. And that's what the organizations, that's the complex part of least privilege, is making sure that you're creating an architecture that's dynamic. And we do it, and I'll tell you, we solve for like our admins. We don't allow our admins to do their admin work on their, you know, regular workstations. They have email, internet, whatever workstation. We actually right now have physical hardware workstations that they must check out with a smart card to do their admin work. And that's part of the way we reinforce least privilege. Even with that admin work, they're still granted the least amount of privilege they need during that session to do the specific admin tasks they need. That's the type of granular controls that organizations need to get to. They can use machine learning to help them get there. This doesn't, you know, there's no way humans are going to be able to program all that across hundreds of thousands of users. So you need to have good machine learning. You need to have good detection capabilities in place. And you need to really have an architecture that's built around, you know, things like network segmentation to allow for these type of environments to exist.
And something we're hearing more about with Zero Trust is digital empathy. So I'm curious if you could elaborate on what digital empathy is and how it translates to cybersecurity.
So last summer, I wrote a blog talking about the paradigm shifts in cybersecurity. And one of them was digital empathy. Digital empathy is incredibly important because it's forgiveness for the user experience, right? So you want to balance security and productivity for your users. You don't want to impede their productivity. You also don't want things to be punitive. Users are going to make errors, right? Users are not, you know, most of your users are not cybersecurity experts, and even ones that are can make a mistake. We're humans, we're fallible. So digital empathy means that the systems and the tools are resilient enough that if a human does click on that link, that's the most common scenario, by the way, the human does click on that phishing email, it is not going to broadly impact the environment because there's enough systems built behind that link to stop the malware from coming in and impacting the environment. So when you hear of organizations that blame the intern or blame a contractor or blame a single employee, that means they don't have digital empathy. They're not empathetic to their user experience and they haven't built resilient enough systems to actually allow users to make the mistakes that users are going to make anyway.
That makes a lot of sense. And I'm glad that we were able to cover that. And now, as I think about implementation for organizations, let's talk about that. So if an organization wants to roll out a zero trust strategy, and how do they do that? And what are the steps that they need to take?
So I would start with multi-factor authentication. That should be your first step to rolling out a zero trust environment. 100% of your users, 100% of the time. I'm going to just keep saying that until we get there. We know that less than 20%, by the way, of our organizations have rolled out multi-factor, our customers have rolled out multi-factor authentication to that extent, just so you know. So we have a long way to go on that journey. The second thing, and one of the easier things to do, is kind of binary least privilege, right? a lot of organizations we work with, all of their end users have admin rights on their laptop. They don't need them. And I call it a little bit of the scream test. Unplug it, see who complains. You're going to get a much smaller percentage than you think of users that actually needed that type of admin access on their laptop. You should be issuing them devices that have the pre-built applications and services they need. There isn't much a user should have to download. I don't download anything on my work PC, for example, because Microsoft, and I recognize we're unique, right? We make the PC, we make the OS. It's a little easier for us. I get that, okay? We make a lot of the productivity tools. I do understand that. But your build, your laptop build, needs to include the applications your user needs to do their job. That way you can assign least privilege and you can assign it holistically, at least that first binary step of least privilege where everyone has the minimal privilege. That's the second thing. Network segmentation, isolation, micro-segmentation is incredibly important. You don't want, and I'll give a really tangible example. You do not want your backups in line with your regular network. You would be surprised about how many environments have them that way, by the way, because when there is a ransomware event, ransomware is still the largest global threat our customers face. When there is a ransomware event, you don't want your backups to be encrypted along with your production systems and your live data, right? So network segmentation, get those backups, you know, offline or nearline or wherever you can put them, but also test that you can recover them, please. A lot of organizations back up. They don't ever test that they can recover those backups. So when they do have an event, they're really not where they need to be. So network segmentation, assume breach. That should be your philosophy always. Assume there's someone in your environment. This is no longer the moats and, you know, the big fences and the big walls we used to put up with firewalls and routers. By the way, I'm not telling you to unplug your firewalls or turn off your routers. I'm just telling you that you have to assume somebody has already bypassed whatever external controls you have and they're in your environment. So time to detection becomes incredibly important, and you need the right tooling in place to actually do that detection. So whatever tooling you want to put in place. But starting in those few places, you know, rolling out multi-factor authentication to all your users, applying least privilege to all your users, making sure you have the right network segmentation to take critical business systems or backups in an environment that are incredibly hardened. And also that final piece of the puzzle, just assuming someone's in your environment at all times and how quickly can you detect them.
Excellent. And you've framed the concept of zero trust so well. I'd like to know, what are you hearing from customers adopting this approach?
The majority of customers I've talked to in the past 9 to 12 months are on a zero trust journey. It's really a maturity curve of where they are. I think the executive order in the US is going to drive some of those laggards to start the journey. And when I say laggards, I don't mean that in a negative way. I mean people that just have a tremendous amount of technical debt and they're a little overwhelmed with the concept of how they're going to bridge the gap from what they have in their legacy environments to actually building a true zero trust architecture. I think now we have a forcing function. And what we find is when you have a US government, you know, mandate like that, it does tend to trickle out to private sector, right? So I think we now have kind of a forcing function for people to the folks that haven't started on the journey. But most companies that we talk to are convicted that this is the right thing to do. They're just trying to understand what it means to them. And they're trying to understand how they start and how they get the lift that they need. And we know that CISOs are still struggling to navigate this hybrid world, right? They're like, you know, we said first they had to navigate sending everyone home. Now they're navigating bringing people back in part-time, and they're thinking about what their threat modeling. It's a different threat modeling. What does their threat modeling look like, and how do they continue to keep their organization safe?
Excellent. Well, Anne, this has been such a great conversation. I thank you so much for joining us. I'm looking forward to next time.
Me too. Thank you so much, and have a wonderful rest of your day.
You as well. I'm Hillary McClure, Multimedia Director at Cybercrime Magazine. Cyberspectives is brought to you by our sponsor, Microsoft. To learn more about Microsoft's insights on Zero Trust, visit microsoft.com/security. And you can listen to all of our podcast series at cybercrime.radio.